falling, falling down. Don't know which way is up. I wallow in my sin as pride raises up.
Paul, you work with City Team Ministries. Can you briefly share with us what City Team is and what its mission is, what its philosophy is?
The mission of City Team, we kind of came up with this, is in obedience to Christ, passionately transforming individuals, their families, and communities throughout the world. City Team has been doing that for 51 years in the San Jose Bay Area through programs that reach out to those who are suffering in addiction, alcohol addiction, drug addiction, and things like that, and also to many of the forgotten homeless communities and those who are recovering from addictions and all that kind of stuff.
So your job was to come in and to bring in this dynamic of reaching the online communities. Can you describe, like, what is your job description?
City Team follows a very specific set of principles on how to plant the gospel in communities of lost people. And you can read about those principles in books like Church Planting Movements by David Garrison, a new book that just came out that I recommended on my blog called Movements That Change the World by Steve Addison, as well as on a blog by David Watson, www.davidlwatson.org. And these principles basically say, what is it going to take to plant the gospel into a community and allow God to do his work through the gospel of drawing people into a relationship with Jesus that is obedient, that multiplies and results in the transformation of families and communities. And that's been going on for some time. They've seen a lot of success. It does great in communities that have no contact with Western Christianity that the gospel is really getting into for the first time. Basically, the question was, can this process that is used so successfully offline be used in the online sphere? And by success, I mean in the last 52 months, we've seen about 8,000 churches started in sub-Saharan Africa and about 300,000 people come to know the Lord. So that's the kind of success we're talking about offline.
Yeah.
And we're asking the question, what will it look like to do that in the online space with online communities? And so my job is to come in and to bridge that gap between the church planting offline and what we know is successful in discipling lost people into a relationship with Christ and taking it and saying, okay, can we find online communities of lost people and plant the gospel in there as well in a way that results in the transformation of those people online and offline and their communities online and offline?
All right.
So that's my job.
Okay. Well, you know, that's interesting because I know obviously a lot of churches, especially churches in the West, are using the internet to try to impact the people around them and obviously anyone that might bump into them in an online space. And obviously there's a lot of ways that the church is trying to do that, a lot of kind of approaches. I know on your blog you've identified at least four approaches that Christians use to try to reach the internet generation. I just want to kind of go through some of these a little bit because I think that there are some distinct differences and distinct approaches that are being used out there, and they probably should be mentioned separately so that people aren't confused about what some of those approaches are versus what you're doing. The first approach you mentioned is that an offline sort of brick and mortar church tries to recreate their church experience online, such as maybe a live online worship service or something like that. What are the positive things you see about this approach?
Well, yeah, I think there are a lot of good positive things about that approach. First of all, it gives a larger group of people exposure to a true worship service. And so people who may not step into the doors of a church or who may have gotten frustrated with the church and gotten tired of being there can now get online and engage the church through the online space, and it bridges that gap there. I think that there's also, like, one of the things that LifeChurch.tv is doing, they do this space well. They've made some adaptations for the culture, but they take their service and they put it online. And one of the things they did was they bought Google AdWords for things like to have their advertising for their service done in conjunction with somebody who types in the word porn on during any of the times that their service is in. So they type in porn or naked girls, and they'll see a Google AdWord that says, you know, visit lifechurch.tv. And they actually last week had a neat testimony of a guy who had gone online to look at pornography and instead found the ad for Life Church, ended up going to their service, and God got a hold of them and really changed their life and redirected them from that path of destruction. And this guy was in a totally different country than Life Church, who's located in Edmond, Oklahoma. I think God uses those services, and putting it out there so more people can engage is great. Putting it out there so that more of your church members who may be, for one reason or another, not able to get to a church service is great as well. I remember being a missionary kid growing up overseas, and we would be in restricted access countries trying to take the gospel, and on Sunday or any given day, we wouldn't be able to connect with local church experiences or local believers. They just weren't there. And so having that kind of broadcast service online to feed those who are doing ministry on Sunday instead of being in a physical church is definitely a great source, is a great tool. So I definitely see some major positives in there.
Are there any negatives or any drawbacks to this kind of approach?
Well, it really depends on how they approached it. If they approached it from the idea of we're going to broadcast our service online, then they kind of fall into the same category as broadcast ministries have around the world, whether that's radio or whether that's like satellite TV or any kind of TV ministries. And the fact that it's a one-way broadcast instead of a two-way discussion. And so in the internet generation, they don't necessarily want to see a broadcast. They want to engage in a conversation.
Right.
And so there have been some churches online that have made some adjustments for that. And lifechurch.tv is one, not to just, you know, keep talking about them, but they're a great example. In fact, that you can watch the service, and at the same time, they have this chat room on the side where you can ask questions about it and engage other people who are also in that service with you. And so it makes it much more of a two-way conversation instead of a broadcast, one-way broadcast. And I really think that culturally, the online generation doesn't want the broadcast model anymore. They really prefer that two-way discussion where they can have input as well. And the other negative is that it takes that brick-and-mortar look and feel, that brick-and-mortar culture, and puts it online. And there are lots of people out there who have rejected that traditional form of church and said that they don't want to have any part of it. And unfortunately, if you take your same service and you just put it in an online space, then it still has the same look and feel. And those who may be turned off by the culture rather than the gospel may still choose not to engage. And so it'll be important to come up with ways that they can engage the gospel without necessarily getting into a culture that they've rejected.
And certainly for a lot of people, or for a lot of church leaders and church planters and pastors, for them, as they've established their brick-and-mortar services, they've made a very clear delineation. This service is primarily for our people, to feed them, to nurture them, to disciple them, not necessarily to create an atmosphere that every possible outsider coming in will feel comfortable, because certainly doing that kind of thing is an impossible task. You simply can't do it in just one kind of setting or one kind of church service that where everyone's going to know exactly what's going on and everyone's going to be comfortable with it and everyone's going to get all the language and get all the understand all the background of everything. That's why other approaches are necessary to engage the culture and get out there into the culture and not expect them to come in. That's why you get into, I think, other approaches. So you talk about the second approach to the internet generation by starting up evangelistic websites. What's the thought behind this approach?
There are great evangelistic websites. One started by an organization called Top Chrétien out of France, and another one started by the Campus Crusade for Christ. They take the approach of we're going to explain the gospel very clearly online so that people could come to a non-threatening online environment and have the opportunity to say, yes, I want Jesus to be my personal Lord and Savior. And so they'll take out like Google AdWords on who is God. and looking for God or who is Jesus or those kind of terms that when people get online and search for those terms, they'll come to their websites. And you might think, well, who would actually do that? But in 2007, according to Google, who is God was the top who is sentence searched that entire year.
Wow.
And so people are online and they're looking for God. They're seeking for him. And, you know, Top Chrétien came out, I think it was last month or the month before, and they said they just had their 1 millionth person click on a button and say, I want to receive Jesus as my personal Lord and Savior. And so there are a lot of people online, a lot of people who are looking. Not only that, they may be able to broadcast the gospel into countries that we can't enter. And so especially when you look at places like the Middle East that have access to the internet but don't necessarily have or do not have above-ground church services that someone can find. And so they'll go on the website and they'll click and say, I want to receive Christ as well. And so you have those approaches, which is more of a crusade style, more of a Billy Graham style approach to share the gospel and have people say, yes, I want to receive Christ and pray a prayer of salvation. And
right.
So that's the positive side of that.
Instead of walking down the aisle, it's click a button. What are the drawbacks to this kind of approach?
Yeah, the drawbacks of this approach are the same drawbacks that we've experienced year after year after year in doing radio broadcast, TV broadcast, and crusades. The issue is someone clicks on the button, they pray the prayer to receive Christ, but then they don't know what to do next. And
right.
So you've got to somehow have a follow-up system. And it's at that point in time that the guy or girl who clicked on the button can totally fall through the cracks if
right.
the follow-up system isn't perfect.
Right.
And so this online may mean an email from a volunteer, or it means that they pass off the contact to a local church in the area who then follows up. But then once it's out of the organization online's hands, it's really up to the volunteer or the church. And if they don't see it as an important thing to do to follow up with these contacts, then those contacts will fall through the cracks.
Sure.
The other thing that can happen is people will click on the button to receive Christ. They'll pray the prayer. They've got their fire insurance, and they really had no understanding of what they were doing. They felt that draw, but they don't, and they responded to the draw of the Holy Spirit, but they didn't know what it meant. So there hadn't been any discipleship going into it. It was just a response to a, do you want to receive Christ? And they clicked on it and said yes.
Right.
And so that getting to the point of saying, you know, this is what it means to be a follower of Christ, if they don't do that kind of follow-up well, then that can create issues. And the fact that we have a bunch of people who now call themselves Christians or followers of Christ who don't have a clue what that means and may or may not have access to the Bible and may or may not even know how to study the Bible if they have access.
Mm-hmm.
And so so there's just some issues there. And the big issue, too, is that you typically will share the gospel in the same way that you receive the gospel. And so what you get then is a bunch of people who, instead of sharing the gospel from what they've done and their personal testimony and doing it for themselves, they drive their friends to the website. And so you get that's not necessarily inherently by itself bad, but what it does create is it creates a lot of first-generation Christians without that multiple-generation depth that we look for in our ministry.
Right.
And a lot of the time, broadcasts and stuff, they do a great job of getting first-generational fruit, but when it comes to penetrating into a community and doing the stuff that requires transformation of entire community, then it's difficult for that media to do it. And it's not wrong. It's not bad. They're not bad media. It's just one of the drawbacks of the media itself. And they're very aware of that. And so they'll create partnerships with church planners offline who will go in and meet and make contact with them. And then their job is to help it get to multiple generations. If you don't have a follow-up strategy in place, then you're going to have a lot of very shallow first-generational fruit. And that could create a lot of problems in the future for people who think they know Christ, and in reality, all they did was click on a button.
Right. The third approach you mentioned is actually building online community. And this is where someone tries to build community online that will result in an authentic community offline. What's nice about this approach?
instead of gathering a bunch of Christians together to have community, if it's done the right way, then it could also give an opportunity for Christians and non-Christians to come together in community. For example, if you were to start a online website about photography, then that's a safe subject that Christians and non-Christians can come together with. And in the process of building relationships and discussing this affinity or hobby, then they become more of a community. And over time, that community, and this is a natural end to online community, is that they will get together offline. And it's those online, offline relationships and connections that will give the opportunity for Christians to share the gospel within the context of relationship. That's, I think, building those online communities is a great opportunity to kind of mix and mingle with lost people and Christians together to form relationships and to have those relationships result in sharing the gospel within that context.
Great. What do you think are the drawbacks to this sort of approach?
The major drawback is time and cost. Building a community takes a tremendous amount of time. It takes a tremendous amount of effort. And most people are working, they have their bivocational. So they'll have a job and then they'll be doing this as their hobby or ministry outside of the context of what they do for a living. And so it becomes very difficult. It takes a long time to get a community online established. And because the internet is a fickle place, that community may disappear if technology changes or if something else happens. So you may build a community around a, let's say, a new MP3 player, and then the iPhone comes out.
Right.
And so no longer. Or you may build a community around the TV show Lost, and then eventually that TV show is no longer going to be around, and so then your community will dissipate if it hasn't had enough time to gel into a community that isn't held together by the affinity. So it may start there, but it may move on. It means that you should, as an organization or as an individual, consider in your plan the time and energy involved, and then to structure your strategies and tactics accordingly.
So you've talked about the first three approaches people typically take, Christians typically take to online ministry. The first, you have churches reproducing their worship services in an online setting. You have Christians starting evangelistic websites. You have Christians trying to build online community. And then you mentioned this sort of grassroots discipleship approach. This is sort of what you're doing, using church planting strategies to reach lost people in existing online communities. This is what I want to explore more. You wrote on your first blog post, and I really liked what you said here, Christians shouldn't just have web pages. They should inhabit and redeem the internet. This is a very interesting concept, because essentially what you've done is you've taken the model Jesus gave to his disciples in Luke 10 and applied this to the internet world. Can you walk through this passage with us? I know this is a detailed passage, has a lot of information in it, but can you walk through this passage with us and talk about how a Christian should obey this passage in the context of reaching the lost online?
Sure. When we look at reaching this passage, we're saying that it is a pattern of engagement that Jesus laid out for the disciples. And so we see it as one pattern of engagement for us to go out and to engage lost communities in conversations that result in the planting of the gospel and families and communities being transformed. And so we simply go through this passage and we say, well, what can we do? This is Luke chapter 10, verses 1 through 12. And I look at verse 1, it says, after this, the Lord appointed 70 others, and he sent them ahead of him in pairs to every town and place where he himself was about to go. First of all, they went in pairs. So if I'm going to go online, I need to go in pairs. And it's important to go in pairs because, you know, in pairs, you find accountability.
Mm-hmm.
They can sit there and say, you know, you're not doing this right. You're not spending your time right. They can hold you accountable to doing the right things. Like if you post a picture on your Facebook profile, they can look at it and say, you know, dude, is that really how you want to be represented as a follower of Christ?
Right.
And, you know, they can ask those questions and they can sit there and they read your Covenant Eyes report and they sit there and say, is that where you needed to have been? Why were you there? You know, did you really need to be there? And those kind of things. Secondly, if pairs pray for each other, you know, they bathe each other in prayer. You confess sin to the person that you're walking with. So it's a very close relationship. And the next part of that one verse says, the place where he himself, and that is Jesus, is about to go. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know about you, but I was very early on exposed to Henry Blackaby's statement that you want to go where Jesus is. You want to join Jesus in his work. A lot of times as Christians, we join God where he is already working. But if you look at this passage, it's saying, I want you to go where I'm about to go. The idea of engagement is to be there at that moment when mm-hmm. Jesus decides to bring the harvest that he has already prepared in. God has been at work in the hearts and minds of men and women, preparing them to receive his gospel.
Right.
And so I want to be there at that moment where God is ready to take it, his work out of the unseen and make it into visible fruit. So if you go on, it says in verse 2, it says, Jesus told them, the harvest is abundant, but the workers are few. Therefore, pray to the Lord of the harvest to send out workers into his harvest. Pray for the workers to be sent out. Well, let me ask you this question. Were you part of the harvest?
I was.
Yeah, I was too. I'm part of the harvest. The workers for the harvest actually come out of the harvest. And so what we're praying in this passage is that God will raise up harvesters within the harvest that we are going to, and that they would become the ones to harvest the field, and it wouldn't always be the responsibility and job of the outsider.
So you're talking about bringing the gospel, a pure message of the gospel to individuals within a community, say, you know, just for example, some sort of online community that you've joined, bringing that gospel to those key individuals who will then contextualize it for the community.
Yeah, and we'll get into that as we go on. If you go on to verse 3, it says, now go, I'm sending you out like lambs among wolves. Don't carry a money bag, a traveling bag, or sandals. Don't greet anyone along the road. Now here's the deal. In a relationship, which one is more vulnerable, the one with the money bag or the one without the money bag? When you go into a village, you know, the guy with the money becomes the headmaster, whereas the guy without the money has to come in as a servant. There's two things he's communicating here. One is, I want you to enter these communities from a position of service, not a position of authority. Mm-hmm. The second thing he's communicating is he's saying, I want you to enter these communities and trust that your resources will come out of these communities. So you're not only going to have to come as a servant, but you're going to have to depend on that community to survive.
I have a question, just as a point of clarification here. It seems like in Luke 10, Jesus is giving some specific commands to the 70 to go out and to do this sort of ministry. In Luke 22, he's talking to the 12 in the upper room. He said to them, when I sent you out without money bag, traveling bag, or sandals, did you lack anything? And they said, not a thing. He said to them, but now whoever has a money bag should take it, and also a traveling bag, and whoever doesn't have a sword should sell his robe and buy one. It seems to be there's a context where he's telling them, you know, bring a money bag, bring these necessities, and another context where he's saying don't do that. What do you think is the answer to why he says one thing in one place and another in another place?
Sure, he's describing a different approach.
Sure.
There are some places that to get into, you're going to have to take the resources, and you need to have the resources with you. There's some places where it's going to be very difficult, and you're going to need to protect yourself. And so he's taking it from that local approach of going to the villages that are there and is now expanding that out into different areas and is now saying, okay, you're going to require these different resources.
Okay.
You're going to need to do these things. So it's like the same idea when we talk about, should you build an online community or should you join online communities? It's not that either one is right or wrong. They have positives and negatives. They're two different approaches, and you need both approaches to further the cause of the gospel on the face of the planet. So it's not an either or, and they're not in contradiction. It is describing a different method of engagement.
Sure. Okay.
In verse 5, it says, whatever house you enter, first say peace to this household. If a son of peace is there, your peace will rest on him, but if not, it will return to you. Remain in the same house, eating and drinking what they offer, for the worker is worthy of his wages. Don't be moving from house to house. So the idea here is that there's this son of peace who receives receives that disciple who has just come into their village and basically says, come stay with me, live with me, be in my community. I want to hear what you have to say.
Right.
And he tells them, go live with that guy. So the money came from that community to help support him, or he was serving that family and was getting a room to stay or live in, or those kind of things. So the idea is that God is already at work in the hearts and minds of people, and there's someone who has been prepared to receive the new gospel message into their hearts and into their households, and we are to be looking out for those people.
It seems like when what Jesus is saying, and that he's talking about that relationship with the Son of Peace welcomes them into their home and provides.
Well, it's just like any other relationship. There's a give and take.
Sure.
And
sure.
So you're right. Yes, the Son of Peace is feeding them and all of that, but it's not like they're being lazy either.
Right.
So it's
right.
Like,
absolutely.
You know, when Paul talks about, he says, you know, I could have taken money from you guys when he's speaking to the church, but
right.
I didn't. I chose not to. And here's a big deal. If you don't have a reason to be in a community, then that community regards you with suspicion. Any community you go into will regard you with suspicion. Why is this stranger in our community? If you go in and to serve as, you know, in the position maybe of being a businessman or in the position of doing some kind of a humanitarian aid element, then all of a sudden you have a reason to be there and the community goes, oh, he's here because he is doing X, Y, Z.
Right.
Like, give you an example offline in India. You know, we could send our church planters into a village in India, and they'll get beaten because they're just hanging out, not doing anything, and people start to say, okay, why are they there? The other option is we can send them in to bring fresh water, clean water. And so they have this huge tanker truck with a little bitty pipe at the end of it that they use to empty out into the containers in the local village, so the local village can have clean water. It gives them a reason to come back on a regular basis, and it gives them a reason to hang out with the villagers while the truck is being emptied of its water.
Right.
So the villagers never have to look at the church planter with suspicion because he's providing a service that they need that's giving them a reason to be there. And that's the issue. When I look at this Luke 10 passage, it's that coming in as a servant, and it's also saying, I am not here to take something away from this community. I am here to give to this community and to
right.
be a part of this community, not only with the gospel, but with who I am and what I'm doing. And
well, I know that
so,
that's true. Is there? We're talking about a lot about the Son of Peace, and I don't want there to be misunderstanding of what that is. Typically, it's to say son of something or other, such as, for instance, like Barnabas was son of encouragement. That's what his name means. It's an idiom that signifies the idea he was an encouraging person. Same thing with this idea of son of peace. It denotes the idea of someone who is a peaceful person, who is receptive to the peace offered by the pair of missionaries coming in. They're coming in, they say peace to this household, and it's a peaceful person who says, I receive that. I welcome you here. I welcome you into this home. Is that the idea behind Son of Peace?
Yes, that is exactly the idea. And it may be a man and it may be a woman, someone who is bringing peace to the community already, as far as they understand it, but then who also will bring the gospel into that community and introduce it to the entire community. The closest example we have at the moment is a young lady, one of our online missionaries, who has engaged a group of people online who are gathered around an affinity. And so she went into their community, which is set up on a Ning platform, and began talking with them. And at one point in time, that community expressed that someone was sick or something like that. And so she said, because she'd already been there building a relationship, she said, do you mind if I pray for you?
Hmm.
And the leader of the community came in at that point and said, and wrote her an email and said, we are very glad that you're a part of this community and you are welcome to pray for us at any time. And as far as this young online missionary knows, that leader isn't a Christian herself, but was welcoming her presence there, welcoming the fact that she was going to be openly spiritual, welcoming the fact that she was going to pray for members of that community there. And so now I'm talking with the online missionary, and what we're asking the Lord to do is to reveal the person of peace in within that community who will end up causing the gospel to be shared into that community. And so she's just being there. The online missionary is there serving the community, contributing to what is there, praying for the community, being a spiritual, obedient presence in that community, and asking God to reveal that person of peace, who might, in fact, be that leader who welcomed her into that community. We just haven't gotten there yet. We're only on the first month and a half of engagement into that community. Right now, there's me, and I've trained 9 online missionaries, and we're working on this together and have been focused like that throughout the summer. So to go on to verse 8, it says, when you enter any town and they welcome you, eat the things set before you, which it means a lot of times this means eating is, once again, a sign of relationship and relationship building and a sign of welcoming into it. And so it's just saying, eat what's there, be a part of that culture, heal the sick who are there, and tell them the kingdom of God has come near you. Is basically to pray that God would heal the sick, but it doesn't just stop there. When he does heal them, to point at it and say, look, God did that. Isn't that amazing? So they're healing the sick. They're proclaiming that message. They're showing that God is there. It says, when you enter any town, and this gets to verse 10, when you enter any town and they don't welcome you, you're to go out in the streets and say, we're wiping off as a witness against you, even the dust of your town that clings to our feet. Know this for certain. The kingdom of God has come near. I tell you the truth. It'll be more tolerable for Sodom than for that town. And that's the idea, that if that person of peace is not there, that you move on. But even then, later on, missionaries came back through some of those communities. But the idea here is you don't waste your time saying, by hell or high water, I'm going to plant a church here. If they're not ready, you just move on. Now, the cool thing is especially in online context, is you come back.
Well, we're learning about a lot of great things here. We're discussing some wonderful stuff as it pertains to both online and offline evangelism and making disciples. But I want to bring in some of the, I guess, potential objections, because some people express concern about reaching the online generation, because studies show that people who depend more and more on the internet for community feel increasingly isolated, that there's a sense in which when we look at online community, there are people who look at that kind of expression of community and they say, oh, you know what, that's not real community, though. That's just people online goofing off and doing their thing. But really, there's not a real community there. So why enter it if it's just this sort of pseudo expression of community that doesn't have any real substance to it? Why go there if there's nothing really there? Some Christians are concerned because they believe that the real meat and potatoes of community must be lived in physical settings. They stress the need for, you know, face-to-face interactions and of course, things like practicing the sacraments or physically serving the needs of others, those sort of things. Is the value of physical face-to-face relationships compromised in your approach to reaching the lost online?
I don't feel that it is. I think that all those concerns are very important, and it's good to be asking those questions, because we, even as online ministers, we've got to be asking them to make sure that we're following strategies that don't create what I call lopsided or even disobedient disciples. Mm-hmm. And so you're right. Let me just say this right here. As communities online mature, and I've watched them mature, they always get to a point where they say, how can we get together in an offline setting? And if there aren't too many barriers to them getting together, like geography or cost, then they will get together. And not only that, once they get together offline, they'll start getting together more. They'll start participating in major life events and things of that nature. It's just natural. You don't even have to introduce it. It'll come in and of itself. Now, there are going to be some communities that it just can't happen because I'm living in the United States and somebody else is living in Australia. There's other options that if the physical contact offline is not possible, then using a conversation like you and I are doing on the cell phone, or a video conversation through Skype or TalkBox is also acceptable, because then you could see someone and you know, it's another level of connection. And so to kind of talk to you about how community works and how our lives work is that most people don't find fulfillment in one community. We actually have at least three that I've been able to identify. Some have more that we go to, and I call it a fulfillment triangle. That your first community is actually experienced within your household, your home, what you consider to be family. The second community is at your work or your job. These are the people you work with every day, you work beside, that you're in community with. But it's not the same kind of community that you experience at home. You know, there isn't that unconditional love. And then there's a third community that many have called a third space. For many Christians, that third community is found within the walls of a church. And for many people, that third space is online, in an online environment. Now, anytime you experience crisis in one or more of your spaces, you will retreat to other spaces to get the support you need. If the imbalance happens for too long, it creates problems. So even in a non-Christian setting, our online ministers are there to encourage them to engage their online and offline worlds, stay plugged in rather than becoming imbalanced. And that's another thing. A lot of people, like, well, you see a lot of crazy people, a lot of hurting people online. And the answer is, yeah, you probably do, because they may be retreating from one of their offline communities, their family or their work. And so they need someone to meet them in that online space to disciple them, to help them come back into balance, but disciple them also in a way that if they choose to receive Christ in the crisis, then they can take the gospel back into the other two communities in which they're a part of.
I want to posit a scenario here. If you were to, say, engage in an online community, you enter into that community, you find a son of peace, you begin to build relationships not only with that son of peace, but with others in the community. Things progress very well. And let's say this starts to roll into more presentations of the gospel, possibly discovery Bible studies. And yet, let's say there are those geographical or financial barriers that prevent an offline meeting space for this community. At what point is there a turnover of, you know what, we need to, as Christians, now as new Christians, face-to-face Christian community or face-to-face discipleship within our own geographical context? Is there a sense in which we can't find what we're looking for? As you said, maybe those two-thirds, those two other spaces, we can't find the be-all and end-all of our community right here in this online space, and we can't find the be-all and end-all of our discipleship in this online space. It needs to be found in other places as well. Is there an encouragement to go out into that?
Oh, that's a great question, and the issue is it's a DNA question. If you set up the DNA properly from the beginning, you never have to answer this question. And at the end of every Discovery Bible study, we end up asking several different questions. We ask the question, who else do you know that needs to hear what we talked about today, the passage we discussed? And so if someone online is sharing that name, then chances are that's going to fall within the other two communities offline. And they're going to be sharing the gospel offline in the first place. The other thing that we do is we say, who do you know in your communities that is in need, and how can you meet that need, and how can we as a group help you meet that need? And so they're even identifying people who are in need in their online and offline communities, and as a group are seeking to meet those needs. And so as a result, you never have to encourage them to leave the online space, because they've been encouraged to live a balanced, complete life from the first day of engaging a lost person.